The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
Now, the pandemic has taken a huge toll on everyone, but a positive for many has been the ability to remotely work. Gives you a better quality of life with less time commuting, more time in theory with family and friends. Now, the Taoiseach and Minister for Enterprise, Trade and Employment, Leo Varadkar, is going to publish today Ireland's first national remote work strategy to make remote working a permanent option for life after the pandemic. I'm joined by Marie Sherlock, Labour Employment Affairs Spokeswoman. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, first of all, can you outline what the Taoiseach has in turn outlined about what will be available? I mean, can someone say to their employer, you know, knock on the door and say, I'm tired of coming in here, I want to work from home?
Well, that's what we await seeing the detail of that. And I've read the report this morning, and it's important that this strategy has been published. It's 10 months now since hundreds of thousands of workers in this country have been sent home to work. And so the report is, or the strategy is indeed welcome and overdue. But when I look at the detail this morning, I'm very struck by the very laid back attitude of government, the lack of detail in the strategy. And to be frank about it, it's a rehash of their 2019 report on remote working in Ireland. There's a lot of talk about promoting remote working, a right to request flexible working hours, 20% of the public sector and those working in third level institutions to work from home, investment in hubs, but there's no detail as to what exactly this will entail, the money, the investment that's going to go towards that. And I suppose importantly as well, there is a real reticence and reluctance to look at the protections we need to put in place for workers, particularly with regards to the right to switch off and indeed covering the costs of working from home.
Isn't this supposed to be part of the regime they're going to introduce under this law, that you will have the right to switch off?
Well, I think it's important to say, firstly, that there is an EU work-life balance directive coming down the tracks, that has been passed by the European institutions. It needs to be transposed by the Irish government by the middle of next year. And that effectively will grant the right to flexible working for parents and carers of children under 8. So we know that the government has to transpose that legislation into Irish law sometime between now and the middle of next year. What's not clear from the strategy today is that, you know, is the Irish government going to go further than that? There's just one line that says we're going to legislate to provide employees the right to request flexible work by the third quarter of this year. But really, we need to see more detail. Do they mean all workers or not? It's not clear. Mm. I think the other thing to say is as well that, you know, working from home has thrown a lifeline to thousands of workers and indeed their employers and workplaces over the past number of months. But it's not new. We know that at the end of 2019, 475,000 people were doing some or all of their work from home. And I suppose what the pandemic has done, it's accelerated that trend. We know that we believe and understand that there's going to be a greater share of workers doing some or all of their work from home once this pandemic finishes. Now, and so it's really important that we get the protections and the promotion, not just the promotion, but the protections in place as well.
Yeah. I mean, the Taoiseach outlined the notion that 20% of the public service might end up working permanently from home, and also the idea of a blended idea of working. And I presume that's just you go in some days and you don't go in other days. And it might suit them in terms of accommodation if they've got hot desking. They don't have to have as much capacity if some of the workforce are at home some of the time. And they could organise it so that it allows them to, you know, plan the usage of the desks so they don't have to have so many.
Yeah, and look, certainly, you know, that would be, I think, a welcome development in the world of work in Ireland, that there would be a greater share of people enabled and facilitated to engage in that blended work model of, you know, between the office and working from home. But there's a number of key issues surrounding that. And, you know, the strategy this 29-page strategy that was published this morning, you know, goes to some effort to talk about the need to protect women in the workplace, gender pay equality, those with disabilities, that it may enable indeed more numbers of women to be in the workplace, greater numbers of those with disabilities to be in the workplace. But while they acknowledge that there may be issues in terms of people effectively being at home and isolated, and then perhaps suffering a prejudice in terms of promotion or indeed with regards to pay increases, they make no effort whatsoever to put protections in place. And so last November, myself and Labour Party leader Alan Kelly put forward a bill to the Dáil, a working from home bill that sought to address some of the key issues and put in place protections for those working from home. And one of and it did three things. Firstly, with regards to ensuring that there's proper workplace equipment, because we know some employers have not properly provided the health and safety legislation is not enacted within people's homes, and it's also quite outdated at this stage. Secondly, with regards to the cost of working from home.
Let's not go too extreme on this. Health and safety in people's homes, they're not bringing home the chainsaw to work from home. You know, they're sitting at a desk where they would normally. What sort of health and safety would people have to do?
Well, Pat,
if they're working on behalf of their employer, that they wouldn't be doing for themselves. I mean, it's up to you to protect yourself in your own home.
Well, actually, interestingly, Pat, there's a very detailed set of health and safety legislation in this country that sets out your laptop, it refers to desktops. In fact, it refers to equipment from a previous era with regards to the tilting of the computer and the keyboard and the light reflection from the desk. And so there is a very clear need to update this. I suppose the other thing is, and certainly from the survey we conducted last summer, and we had over 300 people respond to our survey, and indeed there's been many other surveys conducted, you know, there's lots of evidence to suggest that people have been working from the edge of the bed, or, you know, the kitchen table, you know, has become their new office. And certainly there are issues with regards to the lack
of
proper
equipment. You can't, unless an employer says to you, you have to work from home. If the employer offers you the facility of working from the office, you don't have to work from the end of the bed because you have an alternative. Do you know? Oh. You can't be expecting the employer to replace the bed, you know, or have some sort of a... Do you know?
Absolutely.
I mean, that'd be ridiculous.
Well, what's ridiculous is that some employers have expected their workers to work from home and have put no provision in place in terms of a desk or a chair or indeed a computer. And what I'm saying is that our bill sought to address that. Now, we don't have anything reflected in the document today other than a very vague commitment to updating the health and safety legislation in this country. The other important point is that we have seen a transfer from the costs of running an office from an employer onto the shoulders of a worker. And again, there has been, in our bill in November, we proposed that employers would be mandated to make a daily or weekly payment in respect of those costs. And we see nothing in this report other than a vague commitment to deal with this in the budget for next year. And I suppose most importantly, Ireland, when we look at other EU member states at the moment, and in particular in the likes of Belgium, Italy, France and Spain, they have introduced in recent years a right to disconnect. So one of the key things that has emerged in all our learning about working from home is that while it has been a very positive impact on people's lives in terms of less commuting, whatever else, there is also an issue with regards to that corrosive mental and physical health impact of feeling like you're always on and an inability to switch off. And so what we are saying is that there needs to be a clear legislative requirement put into Irish law on the right to switch off. We have the Organisation Working Time Act, which sets out the maximum.
I mean, this will all have to be teased out. And you will, you've had a good go at explaining your situation. Your bill obviously will be superseded by whatever the government decides to bring in, and you'll be able to have a go at committee to try and adjust it to your wishes.
Well, interestingly, the government actually did not oppose our bill last November. It's currently with the Joint Oireachtas Committee on Enterprise, Trade and Employment. And we very much hope that our bill will be the basis of future legislation. But I suppose when I look at the strategy this morning, they talk about the right to switch off should be the subject of guidance from the Workplace Relations Commission. And we do not believe that is good enough. We believe that there needs to be protections put into legislation. And you know, and they talk about, you know, a fear of overregulation here. What we are simply talking about is that there is a policy within your contract of employment with regards to out-of-hours correspondence. And secondly, that if you have to engage in out-of-hours electronic communications, that it's counted as part of your working hours. And I don't think that is in any way unreasonable. But the government have shied away from that. And I think that's a real source of disappointment today. And I know the Financial Services Union and indeed other
unions. That's a very dangerous area because, you know, the job's worth. Oh, no, it's a minute past five. I'm not talking to you. Or a teacher says, I spent 4 hours last night and 4 hours every night. So that means I've accumulated two days
for
my extra
holidays
on the working week.
But Pat,
no, I'm saying that sometimes it's part of your work that you actually do a bit of improving yourself, shall we say, after hours.
And Pat, I suppose the key point here is that we need to update how we account for working hours. We know that in many cases that 9 to 5 is no longer there, or 9 to 6 is no longer there. Indeed, I know working parents like myself, you know, they'll rush home maybe a half an hour early for maybe their usual closing finishing time, try and collect the kids, get the kids fed, put them to bed, and then they're back at the desk at night time.
Okay.
And I suppose
one
it's about
point.
A flexible workplace. But it's ensuring, sorry Pat. No, sorry, Pat, it's really important to say this, but it's ensuring that workers are properly...
Not everything you say is important, I have to point out. I'm getting a bit annoyed here because I have another guest who wants to comment on this. And, you know, I want to put a question to you before you go. Do you want to shut down small business? Is that what you're trying to do? Because if, for example, everyone has the right to ask for remote working, suppose you have a small office, one receptionist who answers the phone, etc., etc., and that person then says, I want to work from home. What's the small business to do?
So small businesses are the lifeblood of this economy. They account for over 90% of all employment in this country. In fact, a higher percentage than that, right? This is about ensuring that for workers in either small companies or in big companies, that there is a proper structure put in place to protect them, right? And to ensure, and also that workers can give more in the workplace, right? That they're facilitated, that it, rather than a worker having to say, I want to work part-time hours, that they're actually given flexible hours. That's really important. Mm. But we need to ensure that it isn't just a one-sided debate here, that the flexibility is all in the employer's side, that it's not just on the employer's side, and that there has to be some protection put in place for workers. Okay. I think the last thing to say, Pat, on this is that there's been an awful lot of talk about gender pay and promotion of women in the workplace. And we know from research in the United States that if people are working from home and are not in the office, that on average, they tend to get fewer pay increases and less access to promotion. And if we are serious as a country about ensuring that there's more women at work and that they're properly respected and promoted and looked after, then these protections are vital in Ireland.
Okay, Marie Sherlock, Labour Employment Affairs Spokeswoman. Thank you very much for joining us. Listening to that conversation, John Barry, Managing Director of Management Support Services, specialising in HR. John, what do you make of both the Labour Party ideas and the Taoiseach's suggestion, which obviously will be teased out when we see the colour and the shape of the bill?
Morning, Pat. Good to talk to you. I'm talking to you from my bunker at home. Look, I mean, it's interesting to listen to what Maria said because she actually made some very valid points and basis for concerns for employers. Firstly, her interesting comment, over 400,000 are currently working from home, and that's without any legislation, any compunction on anybody to have to work from home. So it's already happening. And that was at a time where I would imagine a lot of employers would have been wary of allowing people to work from home because of concerns, would the work get done? I think the pandemic has shown to a lot of employers that it can work if it's done properly. And so in that sense, I think, you know, there is a potential that this whole idea could grow naturally rather than having legislation to enforce it. And I always say legislation is a sledgehammer. Legislation is very prescriptive. And the classic example of that would be the Organisation Working Time Act, which Maria referred to there, saying working hours. It says people can't work for an employer for more than 48 hours in a week. It doesn't say, though, and it's done for health and safety reasons, it doesn't say people can't work doing their own taxi or doing their own painting or decorating business at weekends. So people could do another 40 hours over the week, and they're not covered by the legislation. So legislation is not necessarily the best way to deal with these things.
The but doesn't it have to be? Don't people have to have the right in law to ask for the right to work from home, for example, if it's very convenient for them to do it and they know they can work? We've had loads of texts in from people saying, I want to work from home. There's nothing to stop me doing all of my work at home, but my employer, for some reason, and this is even, we heard from the unions the other day, from FORSA, the Public Services Union, saying that even in the public service, they're saying, no, you have to come in. Now, you know, maybe they should have the right to say, no, I don't have to come in. I can do this perfectly well from home.
Okay, well, I mean, firstly, isn't it sad that we actually have to legislate to give an employer the right to go to their employer and say, is there any chance I could work from home for the following reasons? I mean, that's there already. Obviously, for 400,000 people, it's happened. So, therefore, there's no need to legislate for someone the right to do it. The difficulty with legislating the right is that then the decision not to provide someone becomes potentially to be decided by an objective third party. If you look, for example, at the part-time workers legislation and the code of practice, because they've actually said employers should look at the right, should possibly consider part-time working, and they've said that what you have to look at in the business context is that you've got to see, is there increased cost of administration? Are there organizational difficulties, having to accommodate people, replace people at work, and concern around the day-to-day operations and the interaction of staff? So, and those are the natural things an employer will consider. Will someone work from home? Will we lose the team spirit in the workplace? Will we lose the bonding? Because so much.
What you're saying is that the employer might say, okay, I know that you do X, Y, and Z during your working day. That's your official work. But what we actually get when you're all in a meeting room together is we get a synergy that gives rise to ideas and creativity. And therefore, we would like you to be in the office. And you want the employer to have the right to say that. Is that it?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, that's in the previous code of practice for the part-time working. I mean, it recognises that employers have got to look at their own personal circumstances, and they shouldn't be penalised if they say no and then have to go and justify to the Workplace Relations Commission, etc., why. I mean, there's enough legislation for people if they feel they're being discriminated against as a female under equality legislation or if they're disabled. So all those things are covered already. So why should an employer have to say, no, I want my team to work together, and to be quite honest, it's my business and I'm happy. I feel I get more from five people working in the same office together rather than three working in the office and two at home. Because when people are home...
This is a two-sided argument, though. I mean, we heard from loads of listeners saying that they want to work from home in this pandemic. They're putting themselves in harm's way using public transport, for example, and they don't like being in an office where they're not really convinced it's being run in a safe way, and yet the employer is telling them, you've got to come in because I like it.
Well,
that
that's in the COVID environment. You know, we're talking. This conversation is outside the COVID environment because I think they are two very different circumstances, and we've got to. We can't just legislate for COVID because that's going to be gone, please God, by the end of this year or by the end of next year, and we're all going to be back to normal working, whatever normal is. So we've got to look at it in that context, and that is the concern which many small employers would have. At the end of the day, a small employer is interested in making profits for his business and his investment. If his employees working home will give him more profits, then he's no reason to complain if it can work properly. But there are so many pitfalls at the moment. I mean, Maria was there again saying early on about the health and safety side. If an employee exercises their right to work from home and they work from home, the employer does assume a responsibility that their workplace is safe. And the employer then has to then make sure, A, where they're working is suitable, B, that they're properly insured. And
are you saying that employers might have to inspect their employees' bedrooms if they're working from the end of the bed?
I was reading yesterday an advert for a company who are now specialising in auditing people's homes to make sure it's safe. So it has started already, Pat.
Oh,
it's
dear,
the
oh,
obligation,
dear. Oh,
and you've seen it suggested through postings from the legal profession. You know, employers have got to be careful because they're now exposing themselves to health and safety claims and this, that, and the other. So it's out there. It's being advertised that, in fact, there are potential risks for employers. So okay, if you take my office...
I want to get this. You see, I think we're living in an extraordinary Alice in Wonderland kind of universe where you set yourself up to work from home and then you fall off your chair and you sue your employer because they have a responsibility for you working from your own home that you don't fall off a chair. Now,
I've got
to
make sure.
Kind of a bit crazy.
It is. I mean, I've got to make sure as your employer that you've got, I think it's a 5-pedestal chair, if it's a moving one, which you're using. And therefore, I've got to probably supply it. And if you fall off that chair, I've got to show that I did a proper audit to make sure the chair was safe. Yeah,
but if my child is crawling around the floor and I move my swivel chair and one of the casters goes over my child's finger, who's responsible?
Then I'm sure someone will argue there's a duty of care there. The employer. What
all right.
The employer put in
Look,
place.
Look, this discussion obviously will take on a reality when we see the heads of the bill and so on. But for the moment, John Barry, Managing Director of Management Support Services, specialising in HR, thank you very much for joining us.